You have heard me ask the question, where did Jesus go after his resurrection? Remember the answer? Jesus went into the church. That is fundamental to our understanding of church over the past 2,000 years, based upon scriptures. You may recall when Pope Francis first was elected pope, he said, "It is an absurd dichotomy to think of Jesus, of living with Jesus without the church, of following Jesus outside the church, of loving Jesus without loving the church." Some 500 years ago, there began a schism in Christianity, which has shattered many Christians into innumerable factions, perhaps as many as 50,000 different Christian churches today, creating the impression in many quarters that the Catholic Church is just one more of those factions. It couldn't be farther from the truth. The Reformation was divisive. It was a schism leading to more factions, each with its own peculiar theological twist or emphasis. This happened because many rejected the apostolic teaching authority of the Church. Meanwhile, the apostolic church has survived, and Jesus lives in the church. The teaching of the authority of the church remains. The Apostle John, the beloved apostle, in that reading we shared from the book of Revelation, is describing the church as the New Jerusalem. "The angel took me in spirit to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city of Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God. The wall of the city had 12 courses of stones as its foundation, on which were inscribed the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb." John saw our church as one holy, Catholic and apostolic, as we say in the Creed. John writes, "The city had no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gave it light, and its lamp was the Lamb." Jesus is in the church. Jesus is the temple of the New Jerusalem. Jesus taught the apostles that He would send the Holy Spirit to guide the church. We hear Jesus tell the apostles at the Last Supper, "I have told you this while I am still with you. The Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all that I have told you." In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus told the apostles, "Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always until the end of the age." Jesus is in the church. The 12 apostles could have split into 12 schisms, but they didn't. They sought unity and taught unity of the church. Look what happened as recounted in the Acts of the Apostles, which we read as the first reading, in what we refer to as the Council of Jerusalem. Christian faith rapidly spread from Jerusalem to the whole world. However, the Christians in Jerusalem were Jews who accepted Jesus as the Messiah, but still followed Mosaic law. They considered themselves Jews, including the circumcision and the dietary laws. Israel was a very small country, surrounded by a much larger world that was largely Greek-speaking and pagan. Jews called them Gentiles. Outside of Israel, few spoke Hebrew. Faith in Jesus Christ was spreading well beyond Israel into the Greek-speaking areas. Recall that Jesus appeared to St. Paul and said to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Jesus was referring to himself in the church. Paul was persecuting the church. And Jesus told Paul to go to the Gentiles. A significant number of early Greek-speaking Christians settled in Antioch in Syria, a major Roman city about 700 miles north of Jerusalem in Syria. The apostles in Jerusalem sent Paul and Barnabas to investigate the budding Christian community at Antioch. The elders at the church in Antioch later sent Paul and Barnabas on their evangelizing missions to the peoples and nations beyond Israel, and largely in what we know today as Turkey and Syria. And thus the Christian faith spread well beyond Israel into the pagan, Gentile, Greek-speaking world. It was at Antioch that the term Christian was first used. Christian comes from the Greek. It's the Greek version of Messiah, the anointed. We are anointed. We are Christians. Antioch has been called the cradle of Christianity. The problem arose, however, that the new Gentile Christians were not Jewish Christians following Mosaic laws of circumcision and diet. We read, "Some who had come down from Judea were instructing the brothers, 'Unless you are circumcised according to the Mosaic practice, you cannot be saved.'" These were Jewish Christians going into Greek cities like Antioch and telling them that they had to be Jews first before they could become Christians. This was strong stuff and led to a serious schism between Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians. They both believed in Jesus Christ. They both were baptized into the church, and they both went to Mass, received the sacraments. However, they could not even share a table or a meal with one another. The Jews wouldn't eat pork or bacon. The Jewish Christians demanded that the Gentile Christians first had to be Jews and follow Mosaic law, including circumcision and diet. And this became a major problem in the first generation of the church. This was the problem confronting the apostles. The elders in Antioch, including St. Paul and St. Barnabas, knew that they needed to resolve this conflict or the church would split in two. And they recognized the need to consult the apostles in Jerusalem, and they sent Paul and Barnabas and other Gentile Christian leaders from the church in Antioch to consult the apostles in Jerusalem. In this manner, the church at Antioch first demonstrated the awareness that the church must be one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic. The apostles reacted. They listened to the arguments, and they sent a letter to the Gentiles in Antioch. And here's what it said. "It is the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us." Think about that. They knew the Holy Spirit was in the church, and that by consulting together in unity, they would be guided by God. "It is the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us not to place on you any burden beyond these necessities, namely to abstain from meat sacrificed to idols, from blood, from meats of strangled animals, and from unlawful marriage. If you keep free of these, you will be doing what is right. Farewell." Unlawful marriage. Well, the pagans had practices like marrying brother and sister, first cousins, or even, say, a 30-year-old man marrying a 4-year-old girl. These are unlawful marriages. That's what the apostles were telling them. Thanks to the Council of Jerusalem, today, in our Catholic Church, we don't have any dietary restrictions to avoid meat sacrificed to pagan idols, and to avoid many of the kinds of marriages practiced among pagans. That was the limit. No more restrictions. No more Mosaic law requirements for the new Christians. The church was to be one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic. Over the centuries, consulting the apostles or their successors has become normal procedure in the church. Once every 5 years, every bishop on earth goes to Rome to consult with the Pope. We call it the ad liminal visit. And over the centuries, the bishops of the church have come together in great councils to address issues that cause serious division and to resolve the issues together by consulting the successors of the apostles, all of them together, to strengthen church unity. We call them ecumenical councils. And the most recent ecumenical council was Vatican II, over 50 years ago. And from that great council arose common understanding for the church in the modern world. We believe in one holy, Catholic, and apostolic church. The church is our mother. The Holy Spirit resides in the church and guides her. Thanks be to God.